Hey everyone, welcome to The Rehab. This is episode 1, season 1. My first guest will be Fartface 2000, and we will be talking about really interesting stuff in the upcoming minutes. I hope you guys are gonna enjoy this episode, and stick around for more later. So enjoy the show. But before we proceed, I want you to know one thing. This is in no way a financial advice, and you should consult a professional before investing. Else you're gonna get wrecked all by the little shitcoiners out there. Okay, now we record.
Interview me, my friend.
So here we go. Welcome on my show. It's really a pleasure to have you here as my first guest. I'm really excited about having this conversation going on here. I'm pretty sure you are too. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good too. It was just a crappy day, but I'm doing okay.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, sure.
What time is it there?
It's actually 7:30 p.m. here.
Okay, so I'm here. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's like there's 6 hours of difference between Central Europe. It's like Europe itself and the East Coast.
Cool.
So yeah, you have a paper coming up in Citadel 21. And you said it's something about the PPP loans. Want to talk about it?
I'd love to.
All right. Now, as I heard, the U.S. been granting these loans for small and medium-sized businesses, and even for larger ones like hedge funds. And they've been getting millions of dollars for, what would I say, like retention of workforce. And apparently there was some sort of a problem out of this thing, because it turns out many of them were abusing these loans in order to just make a quick buck. And as far as I know, you kind of checked the details on these loans and you refused it. How did you arrive to that decision?
Good question. Well, number one, I mean, the loans were good for if you had a company with less than 500 employees. So that's considered a small business in America. So I have a business with less than 500 employees. And when they released the loan applications, it was like a fire sale. My bank, in fact, just sent me a routine email like every day for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, until finally we got approved. And then once we got approved, I started to dig into the paperwork, because when it first got announced, everybody I knew was like, you got to sign up for this. This is, you know, they're shutting you down. It's free money,
good,
blah, blah,
it's
blah.
Too good to miss, huh?
Well, if your competition is getting free money and you don't have free money, how do you compete with them? Right?
But no how.
You can't. But so personally, what I did was, once we got the approval,
it's hold okay.
On. But anyway, once we got the approval, Hold on. I'm going to have to answer.
Yeah, sure. We can always cut these parts out.
Hey, that was my youngest daughter. I'm turning this phone off.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No, it's totally fine. I mean, this show is really unscripted, and anything can happen any moment. So I don't really mind having such things happening, because it kind of shows people that there are really people living their lives and everything is normal with them. I mean, just not robots, you know, playing a scripted role on the entire podcast. But yeah, I get your point with the whole thing that people getting free money and then, you know, competition kind of changes, because when you get free money, you can do more things, while if the other side refuses it, they're stuck in the same situation that they are. It's similar like how I was offered a loan on my scholarship in order to just get like free money, and there's absolutely zero interest loan on it, and everybody was just taking it because it was free money. And although here in Hungary, there were absolutely no clauses that would have been kind of this risky for me, as how you explained it in your tweet, but I guess it's more interesting over there.
The way this loan works is it's like a low interest loan. It's like 1%, but they will forgive they calculated the loan amount based on your payroll before the virus. So if you can get back your payroll back up to those levels, they'll forgive it. And I think you have 24 weeks. They extended it to get, you know, to get your numbers back up. But what ends up happening is, like in my business, and I'm seeing it. I mean, I think I just lost the job last week because of it. My employer had my competitor has the free money, and I don't have the free money. So I'm analyzing a job that I'm bidding on a lump sum based on my profit and loss. He's analyzing the job based on, I got to get people employed to get my labor numbers up, because if I don't, I'm not going to get this free money, you know? So it's like totally changed the every actor's in the economy's incentive. I mean, my incentives are still the same, and again, I turned it down because I'll tell you why I turned it down.
Okay.
I turned it down because I don't want the government in the future to tell me what I can do and what I can't do. And to accept that loan, you had to certify that you've exhausted all other forms of liquidity. Well, I have other forms of liquidity. So how could I ever write that? How could I ever certify that? So,
but
I'm not
can anybody else kind of certify that they have other forms of liquidity? I mean, everybody has. So it doesn't really make sense to, you know, offer these loans then, does it? Or...
Well, I mean, there are small businesses like that it was very, you know, it would have been good for, like hairdressers, restaurants, companies.
Especially
that really had
businesses, yeah.
Yeah, those small businesses had to close, right? And maybe they didn't have other forms of liquidity. Maybe they didn't have other forms of capital that they could get their hands on to get them through the shutdown. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know what I mean? I have no issues with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not judging other people. I'm just telling you from my perspective. I'm not going to lie on a government application where, because they didn't vet these loans. They put the onus on the small business to certify. So I don't know if you saw, like a couple weeks ago, the Trump administration released a spreadsheet of all the companies that took money, and that's what now people are starting to ask questions. And how come this company got money? They can work remotely. You know what I mean? It doesn't really affect their business. And it's just because you free money, everybody's going to try to get it. You know, it's just your natural
incentive.
Yeah, it's
interesting. Like they released it and then you can see these hedge funds also got into billions of dollars and barely any employees.
Hey, do you ever read any John Grisham books?
No, I did not.
He's a good writer, but I can foresee somebody in the future. Right, because now this list is public. Imagine like a forensic accountant / lawyer that drives around with a laptop and goes to small businesses and confronts them like, hey, you had this line of credit, you had this, you know, you could have tapped this money, you could have tapped that money. I'll tell you what, I won't bring this out into the public. Pay me $1 million in Bitcoin.
Oh shit. It's like
extorting
them.
Happening.
Yeah. Or
yeah.
Have like banks looking at these things and then, you know, change their credit rating or something and like give them less cash because they will be more risky if such situations would happen.
How many unemployed lawyers and accountants are there out there looking for work?
Maybe a
right?
lot.
They could use this list, man. They could work that list.
Very interesting. And the consequences of it is also really interesting.
Hey, but let's talk about a little. I want to just shift the conversation a little bit. Number one, me and you are from two opposite sides of the world,
pretty much.
And we're two different generations. You know, I'm like the age of Tupac, but alive. You're what? Right? You're in your 20s.
Yeah, you're my late 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate your generation's perspective a lot more than mine. My generation, be honest with you, we just accepted everything as is.
Like being in the situation, I mean, you're kind of that old. You could be my father also. I was like, my dad is like 52 years old.
Yeah, I'm a little bit younger than that, but my oldest daughter's 27.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And let me drop her. Let me drop something for her. A little plug.
Right.
HealthTeaBookCrate.com. Last month was the first month she ever sold out. So give her a little. She told me to plug
really
it
cool.
if I'm on this.
Yeah, I've seen the book also. I've been thinking about looking into it.
It's a subscription book club that she runs, and she started a couple years ago. It's just like a hobby for her, but she loves it.
Pretty cool. And I'm sure she really enjoys it doing that also. Does she?
Yeah. No, she's into
really
it.
Really cool.
But
So what was this thing with the payrolls? Care to elaborate on those? How did these get sorted out with the PPP loans? Because I know you sent me this file.
You logged on to the Small Business Administration's website and you filled out the application. Or was your bank maybe you logged on to and you filled out the application. And the application basically was like a math formula based on your payroll and your expenses, et cetera. And then they calculated out a loan amount that you were approved for. And you have like 24 weeks, I think, to spend that money. And if it's used for payroll and some other things, maybe like rent or stuff like that, the government forgives it.
So just for payrolls and for rent can it be only spent on?
Yeah, and the government forgives it. And
how soon does it have to be repaid? Or
I think you get 2 years to pay it back.
Okay.
At 1%.
Because it was kind of confusing for me in the beginning because I saw something like you have to repay it in 2 months or something, and I wasn't really sure if I was reading it right.
Yeah, they changed the rules. They keep changing the rules. I think originally it was like 8 weeks you had to spend the money, and then
but
they extended
it out to 24.
But that's really
crazy. Like, you have to spend it in 8 weeks, like so fast. Well, like, what do they really expect people to just get the money and then immediately just get rid of it and then not think about, spending it properly?
I think their original math was based, I think your loan is based on 8 weeks of your payroll and expenses. So they wanted you to spend that in 8 weeks originally. But I'm pretty sure they realized that everybody's slow, just because they turn the economy back on doesn't mean the work's there for people. Plus, during the shutdown, a lot of businesses, including mine own, we figured out more efficient, productive ways to do things where we don't necessarily, we don't need as many people anymore. It's kind of sad. But that's reality. Everybody's realizing it.
Yeah, efficiency comes before. So yeah.
Yes. But going back to the hazard of the loan, like the moral hazard, is my opinion. I mean, how could you call yourself a capitalist and take that money? Now, I've had a couple little debates on Twitter about it with people, and a lot of people think their feeling is like, hey, I pay taxes. They take from me. It's time for me to take back.
Oh yeah.
And I had one guy. I think one of the text threads that I commented on was Yaron Brook, who's the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, right? And you would think, I don't know if you've read Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, right?
Not yet.
Do you know the gist of them?
Not that much.
The gist is like capitalism, individualism. You should never depend on the government. You should depend upon yourself. And it's immoral.
Oh, yeah, I know about this one, about that part, yeah.
It's immoral to be altruistic, where it's moral to be, selfish. That's basically their whole thing. And, it kind of makes sense to me. I mean, basically, if everybody does what's best for themselves, things kind of should work out. I mean, that's your incentive is to do what's best for you. Right. There's no incentive, yes, really, unless you're really charitable. Most people, do what's best for themselves. And then you do for others. You put that mask on yourself and then you put the mask on the kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But a lot of the people's perspective was like they're taking back. What are you taking back? I mean, just look at the numbers. There is nothing to take back. It's all big fucking negative. Oh, sorry, I didn't want to curse. But you know what I mean? It's all big negative. So how do you justify that? You're just adding on to the debt. You're just adding on to the pile. You're not being an individual. You're not being a capitalist. You're just doing it because everybody else is doing it, and you really don't care about the future. You really don't care about the debt, and you don't care about, you're just doing it because you're doing it because it's good for you. Right. And again, I'm not putting down small businesses that really needed it. But if you look at that list, there's a lot of people on there who just signed up for that money because it was available and they realized everybody else was going to take it. So they're going to take it. And that's fine. But don't ever, ever, ever complain about big government. Don't complain about your taxes. Don't complain about anything, because when push came to shove, you made the decision, you might complain about somebody who's on welfare who has additional kids to raise their benefits. You're basically doing the same thing. You know what I mean? You're taking advantage of the system. You're taking advantage of everybody else on behalf of yourself.
Yeah, in order to profit, basically. Companies only did it in order to make their either stocks not go down or, you know.
Well, I don't know about spending. That because these are small businesses, so they're not. Yeah,
I'm not talking about those, but I'm talking about, you know, the bigger ones. You know, the ones that had more money on their balances, probably. It's more understandable that way, isn't it? Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think you might be confusing like big businesses that get bailed out because they you know, like the airlines and stuff like that, and small businesses. So small businesses are, like I said, are less than 500 people. Most of these companies are owned by individuals or by a group of people, not necessarily a publicly traded company. Yes. They're not necessarily on the stock markets or anything. I don't think any of them are. But, you know, the spirit of the PPP loan was to help people out who the government had to shut down, who couldn't operate and had no other sources of liquidity. That was the spirit. And I mean, now that's not the spirit. The spirit is we're just going to inflate the money supply and we're all going to take as much as we can. And, you know, it hurts the guy that doesn't have the opportunity to take the money. I mean, unless you own a small business, you didn't have an opportunity to take the money. What'd you get in this country? You got, I think, $1,200, maybe something like that. I don't know. Just the whole system sucks. You know,
it's all about printing money and keeping people spending. That's the whole point of the system. That's why, you know, government cannot exist without printing money and keeping up competition that way. Because, you know, if they start, you know, they stop printing money and people start saving money, the problem gonna be happening is deflation, and it's like kind of a catastrophe for governments that they're trying to be more competitive with each other,
like, yeah, well, in Japan or some other countries. In a debt-based monetary system, it has to keep expanding. Debt keep expanding.
And like this is like the whole reason, because now that we're having this virus going on and people started saving and spending less on unimportant stuff, the government just felt like it had to speed it up because things aren't looking fine for them, and they kind of like how would I say, out of what's the word for this,
necessity,
it's like an inherent instinct of the government that you see people saving more, the saving rate they keep going up, they have to incentivize spending somehow so that they start printing more for the smaller people now with these $1,200 they got.
UBI?
Yeah, basically.
And hey, let me ask you something else.
Yeah.
What always is, what really amazes me is how other people around the world really understand American politics and, you know, what's going on in America. But Americans, I really have no international affair knowledge whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? Do they teach you about America in school when you're growing up?
They do, but to some extent, they do not beyond a certain degree. So we know what's going on, and then we start consuming information in our national outlets about what's going on in the U.S. So we're informed about what's going on there, not like Americans. So if you would ask, for example, an American, like, where a country is, they probably wouldn't be able to tell. But us Europeans are able to tell where each country is, mostly.
Yeah, that always amazes me.
Like, you know, it's like the whole education system in the U.S. is kind of set up against you in order to put you into this little cage that you have to keep spending and working your ass off in order to work two jobs a day and then not even be able to scrape together enough money for your rent and food. While here in Europe, you're able to get the minimum wage and be able to make a living, except in the UK. I mean, in the UK also, like, their living wage keeps going up every year and they have to keep raising it, and it's been really, really hard for some people there also.
Right.
So it's not all nice over here neither. Like, here in Central Europe, wages are really low compared to, for example, here in Hungary, the minimum wage is like 400 euros. But in Austria, it's 1,000 euros.
How often?
1 month, every month. So we basically get like 175,000 Hungarian forints, and the Hungarian government eats like 33% of that income. That's like 15% income tax, and then the additional is contributions and healthcare and the rest of the stuff. And then you take a look at Austria. In Austria, it's 1,000 euros, so that's like double. but the median income in Austria is actually much more than it's like 1,600. It's much more higher. While in Germany, the minimum wage is 1,450 something ish. So it's like, that's why, you know, Central and Eastern Europeans usually go to Western countries, because they know how to save money there. They are standing back so much from those jobs back to these parts of the, I mean, back to their home. Hmm. You get what I mean? And yeah. Then in the US, you have the same thing with, you know, the Mexicans going over and all this stuff. And then it's kind of creating problems over there.
How the fuck do you, I'm sorry about that. How do
no,
you
it's
know
okay.
About
you, it's totally uncensored here.
I know, but I'm trying to, I don't want to curse them as much. How do you know about the Mexicans in the United Americas?
And it's over the news. It's like every month in the past, when there was that caravan going on, they were also talking about it here and comparing it to our situation. Because, ever since 2015, Viktor Orban started shutting down our southern border and pulling off fences in order to stop the flow of migration from African and Arab countries. And he started like this campaign of portraying every migrant as a terrorist. And then right now in the Hungarian vocabulary, the word migrant and refugee equals with the word terrorist. So it's like a triangle of a word, and how the vocabulary changed over time.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and I see its point, because he wants to remain in power, and this is the easiest for him. Like, a large percentage of his voter base is basically retirees, and it kind of just like, you know, that's what is happening here. And he's been gerrymandering the votes also. That's kind of crappy, but I mean, he plays this game really amazingly, so it's really professional how they're winning and how they are able to beat and make the opposition completely disintegrate. And there are like five minority parties, and they can't even unite for an election, and it's just kind of crazy. But in the US, it's the same thing. You got two big parties who gets elected all the time, and they keep fighting back and forth, and it looks like they're just a bipolar world in the US.
It's a smokescreen. They realize that, like, people are sheep, and most people pick a side like a baseball team, and regardless of the narrative, regardless if they think or not, they're just going to go along with their team. And they work on that. And it's one party this 4 years, it's that party the next 4 years. It's a joke. None of these politicians have a time preference long enough to lay groundwork to make things better. They all just want to get reelected within the next 4 years.
Yeah, I've been hoping on the libertarians gaining ground soon, getting above 10% or something, but it doesn't look like it's going to be happening in the next 10 or 20 years until at least Bitcoin happens.
It'll never happen. In this country, within the system that they play by, it will never happen. And that's what drew me to Bitcoin. I mean, before Bitcoin, I didn't see any other avenue except to just play the game and keep my mouth shut. Just so you know, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining about my situation. In fact, I've benefited from the fiat system, the Cantillon effect. You know, it's benefited me, and so I'm not complaining about it from a personal standpoint. I just see the injustice, and I know it's not sustainable. That's what worries me. And when you have kids, then you start to think like that. You know, is what we're doing today sustainable? You know, most people don't have kids. They don't care about the future. They just care about their own
self. Yeah.
Yeah, their own time.
Or their own survival. That's their even own more survival. Interesting. Because you can't even upkeep a family with these incomes and how the inflation keeps going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, the math is the math. I mean, they accumulate debt. They have these liabilities. Eventually, somebody's going to have to pay for it unless we just stiff everybody, right?
Yeah. Even now, like if you take a look around, you can see like millennials are starting to start stockpiling up the debt slowly.
Dude, I hope the millennials opt out, because I mean, how the hell? I mean, I'm not a millennial, but if I was a millennial, I'd be like, why am I gonna support this system? Look at the numbers. It's like pissing into the wind. You know what I mean?
It whatever comes you back give, right at you. Basically, opting out of Bitcoin, probably the best choice ever you can make in your life. Well, not many people able to make that choice because the narrative about it outside of Bitcoin is so distorted, and they have to, you know, really dig deep inside and reach all the fuzz and everything else in order to really understand it. It took for me a lot of time in order to really understand it also.
Same. And I'm still learning.
Like for me, it's really good. It's like a lifelong journey of learning. Yeah, it's how they kind of shilling, university courses these days and saying like, oh, you have to go do another course on what kind of a dance theory they have that you keep learning. And like, you know, the whole thing with the media also in the US, that it's like, it's so unbalanced towards the liberal side, it's such a bad outlet there on the conservative with Fox News. It's so crappy.
And you know what me and my friends were talking about the other day?
What?
Well, number one, what you just said, our news, our media is bought and paid for. I don't even turn on podcast news anymore. It's a joke. If what I digest is, you know, from on social media the next day, somebody pays a clip. But trash. You know what me and my friends were talking about? Back in the day when they pulled off the Federal Reserve, what was it, like 1913? When they met on Jekyll Island and they got Woodrow Wilson to sign.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. You got to remember what the sources of communication were back then. There was no telephone, probably.
They had to meet face to face.
You had to go. Like, you got all your information from the guy down at the corner. You know, whatever his fucking opinion was, that was your opinion.
That was crazy back then. I'm pretty sure hearing all those crazy conspiracies or whatever else he was making up, they gotta be insane. I mean, but those times were really great, at least.
Your opinion was predicated on what they allowed them to print in the newspaper. And when you talk to the guy down at the corner, at the candy store, at the bar, you know, that's where you got your opinions from. Now think about today. You know, we don't need to look at the newspaper anymore.
Yeah, you just
at least I don't.
It is crazy.
And then I get my opinions. Number one, my opinions are always evolving. You don't ever try to put a label on me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I
have an open mind. Basically, it's really important in this world.
Yeah, I don't. I have no opinion. I mean, my opinions are forming all the time. I could shift tomorrow on what I think if I learn something different. But my opinions that I do have are pretty broad based. I mean, I get my information from a lot of different places, and most of the times I don't believe anything I hear. You know what I mean? Everything.
Or you should never believe anything you hear. You should always at least have a second opinion and look at it from a third also. That's what I kind of learned myself over the years.
Yeah, every source of information you have, you get from, you have to realize that there's an angle that information source has, and you have to kind of identify that and take all the information with a grain of salt. You know, for instance, hey, and we got to do a show where we break down Peter Schiff's investment company into perspective. Oh,
yeah. We're definitely going to do that.
We should get a guy from the mutual fund industry to walk us through it, because I'm telling you right now, it's not good and it's going to be fun.
Definitely. But
why doesn't anybody ever confront him like that? I mean, the guy's just a fucking mouthpiece. He can't make money for anybody but the government.
Pretty much.
No, actually, he doesn't make money for the government because his customers don't make profits, and he's out on... He's out in Puerto Rico on that deal where he doesn't have to pay taxes. So he's not good for anybody but himself.
He's a loser.
Definitely. Fuck Peter Schiff.
That's official. Fuck Peter Schiff.
But go ahead. What do you think about our 87-year-old cancer-ridden... what do you call it? Ginsburg. What is she? She's
the Supreme Court judge.
Supreme Court Justice. How do we have? I mean, she's still employed, isn't she?
Yeah, she is still, and she's like in and out, in like In-N-Out Burger.
Why didn't we throw her a retirement party at 65? Why is she still there? I don't understand that. She's probably inept. I mean, at 87 years old, I mean, my mother's 81, and I mean, she's a nice lady, but I don't want
court. Oh yeah, man, it's like just like thinking like even the generational gap that she's experiencing and she have to decide about those things, it's not coming along nicely, I would say.
I really don't know much about her other than that she's 87 years old. And how is an 87 year old representing the people that are going to live in this country for the next, you know, 100 years?
Yes.
It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
Maybe what else, my man? We have the same problem. We also have a constitutional court who is quasi like a bit different. There are also people who are old. And then we have our Supreme Court also. But it's kind of different because our government been shifting these things. So I'm not really up to date about it because our court system is not really fair anymore, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't. Listen, our court system's fair if you have money to defend yourself.
Oh, yes.
That's the other thing.
It's unfair that way. You just hire the best lawyer in the U.S. if you got so much money and he gets your ass out of anything if he's really that juicy.
Unless they freeze your assets.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that not a lot of people talk about. And that was one of the things that I heard somebody talk about this a while back when I first got into Bitcoin, that he was like, he got accused of something, maybe insider trading. I forget the guy's name and story, but he was accused of insider trading. And it was such a small amount for his personal account. It was like stupid, but they froze his assets. They froze this guy's assets and he didn't have the whereabout to defend himself. So he ended up he thought he was innocent. And he pleaded not guilty, ended up going to jail, and he had no way of defending himself in hiring a lawyer because they froze his assets. Bitcoin definitely fixes that.
It does, definitely. At least it's a big fuck you for the government if they would ever try attempt that.
Everybody should have some Bitcoin. I mean, why not? I mean, why not have some? It's the ultimate safe haven asset. As far as I'm concerned,
this is the beauty of Bitcoin, is that nobody can interfere with your Bitcoin. No government, no law, no judge, no police, no army. Nobody can take it away from you. And you can do whatever you want with it. And they're going to eventually be afraid of that. And that's another thing I've been starting to look into. Like, what are the consequences of it? Are we going to be labeled Nazis or something even more worse? But it's really unclear so far.
I honestly don't think our government's gonna ever try. They've already in America. I mean, they've already embraced it. As far as I'm concerned, there's
embracing communism. You mean?
No, I mean they've embraced Bitcoin.
Oh yeah.
They're trying. You know, they're permitting companies to sell it, people to use it. You know, under certain regulations. You know, taxable regulations.
Oh yeah. Even politicians have some Bitcoin, probably. Some of them even hold it.
I don't think it's going anywhere. I mean, I think it's in the government's best interest. I mean, every dollar that goes in, as long as they make you pay in dollars,
the more they can churn you for more money, more tax money, basically.
Right. I mean, even if you put all your money in Bitcoin and everybody did that, Bitcoin went to $1 billion, right? And you paid $9,000 for it. When you go to spend it, you're going to be paying capital gains tax on the difference. So yes. Why wouldn't they want that? That's just another stream of, it's like a value added tax, right? If you got to pay income, if you got to pay capital gains on every purchase when you use it.
That's even more added VAT on top of it.
It's win-win. It's win-win for the government as far as I'm concerned.
For example, here, taxation is really interesting about Bitcoin. There's absolutely no law about it. There are informal rules about it, as far as I'm concerned. Right now, the taxation on Bitcoin's capital gains is about 35%. In the past, it was 37.5%, but got lowered a bit more. And the most interesting part about it, and a bit in Hungary, when you are holding Bitcoin and you're selling it, as long as your gains don't enter the country, So it's in a EU country, for example, like Germany or somewhere else. As long as the money doesn't arrive into Hungary, it's not taxed. The national tax office doesn't check it. They don't receive any information neither from outside banks. And they have absolutely no knowledge about it. And people have been taking advantage of this also with other financial instruments abroad. So it's kind of like interesting, like, why are they not doing it? It's probably because, you know, most people in the government also own Bitcoin and they don't want it taxed so that it gets even more harder. It would get even more harder for them to, you know, to store money in it or to funnel it out into other countries. That's my kind of my suspicion here.
I think the tax base, the taxing aspect of it actually helps the value, right? Because I know me, I'm accumulating Bitcoin for the long haul. I'm not accumulating it to sell. And now with this LN strike, I don't ever have to spend my Bitcoin. I can just go from, I can support any Bitcoin business just using that for $100 a day right now.
That's cool.
It's awesome. I bought, give this guy a plug. I forget his Twitter handle. It's like MCTBTC. He created the Sats Ledger. Definitely the best thing that I've seen come into Bitcoin since I've been here. Next to the BitPiggy, that is. That's the long game. We get enough kids investing in Bitcoin, saving in Bitcoin. That's the long game. That's beautiful. Especially his invention, this Sats Ledger, really, I would have embraced the shit out of that when I was a little kid. I loved saving money when I was a kid. I loved making money. I loved saving money. Hey, going back to the Mexicans, they get bad rap. They're hard workers, man.
Yeah, they are.
They're hard workers. There's very few in my neighborhood. There's very few criminal Mexicans. They're all hardworking, blue collar men. You know what I mean? And women.
Yeah, of course.
But
I mean, what's the point of going to the U.S. and getting sent back home where you came from? The incentives are not, you know, set up in a way in order for you to commit crimes, even for them.
Yep.
So it kind of makes sense. But, you know, when there are many social safety nets and free money coming into your pocket, for example, for migrants who came to Europe, now that's a different story. Because, for example, I'm not sure if you've ever seen the migrant camps in Calais in France. Have you ever seen it?
Nope.
Now, that's a really interesting thing, because in France, the minimum wage is 1,400 euros. It's something around that. And it's a really decent living wage over there. It's not the best, but you can get by it. And whenever we ask people there why they not want to work in France, it's because they said they don't like it there. That they don't like it. And then another said that they want to go there because they get all the support from the British government. And guess what? If you receive the asylum seeker status in the UK, you basically, it's free game for you. You receive everything. You receive money from the British government. You receive housing. You receive support to find a job. Language training, if you even need it. Everything. It's like it's nuts.
Yeah. I'll tell you, in this, I've lived through the migration of the Mexican into America. So when I growing up, like there was a lot of minimum wage jobs. Like, I mean, when I was in high school and even before high school, I mean, we always cut lawns, shoveled snow. We did all those jobs. Now you rarely see, like, I've never had a teenager come to my door and ask me to shovel my driveway. I've never had a teenager offer to cut my lawn. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore. Now they've taken over that that whole portion of the economy, and they do a good job. They do a fantastic job. I'm sure they're not paying taxes and everything, and you know, and that's why they're so competitive. But there's not that many people in America who are, we've lost our work ethic. I mean,
You guys surely did, yeah.
I'm telling you, I mean, there are exceptions. Like, honestly, the people that work for me, they're hard workers. They're hard workers, but I pay them a lot. They wouldn't work that hard if I paid them what I pay the guy that cuts my grass. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. This is interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, so, yeah, I remember from movies showing the idyllic American family and then showing their kids doing jobs here and there, even doing these lemonade stands and stuff. And then
I don't know about that. I mean, there's a few. I actually passed today. I took a bike ride. I was a girl selling with her mother. It was really nice on the side of the road. They were really selling key lime pie, but she's the exception.
Oh, wow. Probably that didn't die out yet, America, probably. But, like, you know, this job perspectives probably, or perception, I would say, is probably changing. And that's why people are not, you know, going into these jobs anymore, because they think it's too lowly, or it's something that they don't want to do because they can earn somewhere probably better. Or maybe it's the fault of the education system. What I would even more think, it's kind of like it rewires the child's brain to function differently. It's like a total cultural brainwash what they're receiving there these days.
Our education system here, and this is from me and from my children, is like every level that you go to, it's preparation for the next level. So they're always constantly telling you, oh yeah, you have to get ready for this. You got to, you know, we're preparing you for college. We're preparing you for whatever the next level. But it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, you know, when you're getting prepared for college all the time, you're going to be cutting the grass then? You get what I mean here?
Yeah.
So you can see it is changing people's views of things. And it changes society in the end.
Yep.
And this is all done by fucking money. I mean, fiat money.
Yeah, there's a lot in play. There's a lot in play. But fiat money is definitely, if it wasn't for that, none of it would be able to happen.
Yeah, like how the perception is generated behind a piece of paper. Why? How can we even associate value with a piece of paper? How? That doesn't have any backing behind it. How is that possible? Is that it's fascinating to see how much this little thing is able to change the world and society and destroy culture and people and push people towards reckless spending and overspending, loans, everything.
I want to see a society where the political class does not have any, they have to work within the rules that we set. Not, see, right now, the way it is they can do whatever they want because they control the money supply. So they can tell you, they can promise you anything to get reelected. And then even if the money's not there, they just, they'll print it and, you know, it's your future. They don't care. They're out of there in 2 years, 4 years, whatever. They'll borrow from your future whatever you want, whatever you need. What do you need? I get it for you. Okay. I'm going to take it from your future. I'll bring it to today and give it to you now. Right? That's all they're doing. That's all they're doing. So sound money will limit them. They'll have to actually ask you, hey, give me that money. That's all I want to hear. Give me the money.
Give me the money. Honest. Give me the corn. The Bitcoin. Oh, I want the Bitcoin. Definitely the Bitcoin. That would change everything and finally put everything back on its normal track. As it was intended to be. Without somebody fancying printing out even more fiat money. But it might eventually happen. It's my suspicion that it might happen.
What, they'll rehypothecate the Bitcoin?
The problem is that Cyphodemus suggested that there might be a Bitcoin standard coming. And that means that the central banks might hold Bitcoin in order to create a new fiat standard
on a Bitcoin standard.
Yes, a new currency, basically, that is quasi-deflationary. And the problem with this is that it could really quickly derail. And I really hope it will derail, because people should never trust anything like that ever. Because I'm really sure that eventually we will have technological solutions in order to improve Bitcoin. And I'm pretty sure there can be consensus reached about it. Or if not, maybe a third, fourth, fifth, or sixth layer solution can be found that can be just as secure as the base layer, in my opinion. So it's like, it's really interesting. Like, what prevents such a corrupt central bank from printing more Bitcoin fiat? What prevents them secretly doing that, pumping it into the economy? What prevents them?
The base chain. I mean, the base chain's always audible. So for
yeah, I understand that, but you know, when they are printing the paper that is backed by the Bitcoin.
If it's backed by the Bitcoin, it'd be verifiable that it's backed by the Bitcoin.
Let's hope that is the case.
Well, no, it will be. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't. And if it's not, it'll have a lesser value.
Oh yeah, right? I guess. I mean, if they're gonna constantly devalue it, and then we end up in a hyperinflation again, but faster.
Well, no, the Bitcoin is still gonna be the Bitcoin.
Yeah, of course.
Whatever your central bank distributes based on the Bitcoin is gonna be worth less, you know, unless they hold a one for one, and you'll be able to verify it, I would think. You know, if the Federal Reserve says, hey, we got, you know, $1 trillion worth of Bitcoin, but there's all the people have $5 trillion in Bitcoin certificates, right?
They're gonna be it's not
one for one. You know, that's way out in the future. That's way out in the future. They're gonna hang on to their own currency for the longest time, which is, you know,
be whatever. Known how long it's gonna be.
I think of Bitcoin as digital gold. You know, it's like, yeah. I wouldn't spend my gold. I'd spend my dollars before I spend my gold. And I won't. And I'll spend my dollars before I spend my Bitcoin.
Until the gold becomes the money again.
The gold's never becoming the money again. It already failed. But it will. It will have value. It's
no,
not
I mean
going
the Bitcoin.
Away either. Hmm?
No, I mean the Bitcoin. You know, you use it as a gold, like a storage. But when the fiat gonna fail, you're gonna have to use the Bitcoin as a money again. So we do a full circle back to the electronic cash system.
Necessarily. I mean, I think people are going to use, they're going to use store their savings in Bitcoin, and they're going to spend whatever their country makes them spend, whatever the value might be.
If it's going to have any value, if it's going to be easy for them to even to spend it, or if it's just hard to predict if there can be any more value observed in them if Bitcoin reaches peak adoption.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it all comes back to, you know, how we perceive value behind paper money. For example, here in Hungary, we had a change in paper notes. And I had a really, really fascinating observation about it one day when I went to the supermarket. I had a brand new, I had a 20,000 banknote with myself, 20,000 for it. It's like $60 or something. And I went to pay the cashier, and I had to pay something like 9,000. So I was supposed to get like 11,000, like $35 or something. And the cashier gave me back at the time an older 10,000 banknote, while there was a new 10,000 banknote in circulation at that time, because they were planning to pull it out of circulation, the old one. And I asked her, couldn't she give me a new one?
Good.
You get what I'm saying here?
No.
Is that, you know, my perception at that point in that time changed about the value of that piece of paper that I received into my hand. I perceived it as having less value than what is written on its face value.
Oh, because it was old.
It was because it was older, and I know that they were going to pull it out of circulation, you see?
My
perception completely changed about that piece of paper, and I demanded the new one immediately. And then at that point, after a couple of seconds, I realized, what did I say? And I was like, oh my God. That Eureka moment, you know, when you realize that human perception can so suddenly change about a piece of paper that you would never think about so difficultly.
Right.
And then you can just see, like, maybe as we see the value evaporate behind fiat money, It is something that happens within our brain that we don't even understand that it actually happens. And it just happens, and it feels so natural for us that we don't even notice it.
So let me ask you something.
Sure.
What's the meaning behind the name of your podcast, the Bitcoin Rehab?
Rehabilitating society, probably.
Right.
Bringing but other than that, this was a bit comical also, because I just don't want to you know, stick to really, really strong rules and script here. And I just want to let, you know, people bring out their own self here, that what they're interested in, what they are. I just don't want to lock them into this little world that they have to abide by. And I think that's really nice to have.
I like the name. It really, because it really is a rehabilitation. You're taught so much growing up and of the systems that we were operating under, and then you start to learn about Bitcoin, and it's like going to rehab. I mean,
we are in rehab, basically.
Totally,
yeah.
Changes.
We're learning now again how to stack sets and save money and keep going on with our life while trying to figure out how to abuse the fiat system in order to get more Bitcoin. And that's beautiful. Yep. It's like we're taking the orange pill. Take the orange pill. Like, take it every day.
Every day.
We just remove the, you know, the straitjackets, and we just started taking the orange pill. Maybe we just had the straitjacket put on now, and we're just taking it. I don't know. Maybe something.
I don't know. I feel great, man.
I feel free also. Yeah, that's really exciting. It's a life changing experience to get into Bitcoin.
Definitely. And I'm not talking speculating about Bitcoin. There's plenty of people out there speculating about the price.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about the freedom and security of holding it yourself and knowing nobody else can ever take it away from you.
Exactly. And that's beautiful.
Yep.
It's so powerful. It's like you have a loaded gun finally, even in a country where it's illegal, and you can do whatever the fuck you want, and nobody can stop you. And you can spend it on whatever illegal shit you want. That's how sinister you want to be. And it's also dangerous. And
I wouldn't spend Bitcoin on illegal stuff.
What?
I wouldn't spend Bitcoin on illegal stuff. Use fiat for that, man. You don't want
to. Yeah, I mean. But just in perspective, yeah.
Seriously, like my state, like a year ago, when, you know, we legalized, a year or two ago, we legalized cannabis. I'm like, why would you ever buy cannabis from the state? Why would you ever put yourself on that list? You know they're only going to use it against you if you do anything wrong, right? Number one, you can't buy a gun if you're on the cannabis list.
Really? In which states?
Every state. I mean, I have my gun permit.
What the fuck?
In two states. And right there on the questionnaire, it asks you, do you use marijuana? Are you addicted to marijuana? If you answer yes, they're not going to give you a gun.
What the hell? Really?
Yeah.
Nah, that's fucked up. I never heard about that. That's really upsetting me.
So you, if you're a gun owner and a cannabis smoker, hush, hush.
Or go with 3D printing.
Oh, boy. But anyway, listen, man. We've been on this for a while. I don't want to... You're going to have to edit this shit.
I know, right?
You know, make it clean. Make it sound good.
2 hours, Jesus Christ.
What'd you say?
Jesus Christ, 2 hours.
Nah, we haven't been on 2 hours. We're like an hour.
It's okay. It's totally fine. I know. But we should really quickly wrap this up.
Yeah, because a lot of these podcasts are too long.
Too long, and, yeah.
I don't want to be associated with a long, boring podcast.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Plus, I wasn't really prepared for this, so I'm kind of talking out of my ass. There's my dogs. You hear that? But next time we get together, man, you know, keep me in mind in the future. And BitPiggies, always plug BitPiggies.
BitPiggies.com. That's with a Y and S in the end. You know, BitPiggies. Yeehaw!
But man, it's been really good talking to you, and I wish you all the luck.
It was really amazing to have you too, yeah, man.
Dude, I really wish you all the luck. You're my mustard seed. Yeah. You're my mustard seed. Seriously.
You started this podcast, so thank you very much.
Yeah. You're good for the space. You're good for Bitcoin. You're good for people. You're good for the world.
Thank you very much, man.
You got it.
All right.
So
thanks a lot for coming on the show, man.
No problem. And I wish you all the luck. Keep it real. And like, tell everybody what my name for your podcast was.
Whoa.
I wanted to name it The No More Bullshit Podcast with a bit with a slight Bitcoin theme. The No More Bullshit Podcast with a slight Bitcoin theme. But I like your name better.
All right. I will put this into the description.
Keep it real. All right, bro.
Thanks very much for coming.
All right, good. I can't wait to hear the finished product. I'll talk to you later.
No, see you, man.
Bye-bye.
So that was Ford Race 2000 coming on the show. I hope you guys really enjoy the show and going to be tuning in next time. I don't know who the hell going to be the guest next time, but we will see who's going to take the pill and the rehab. So see you next time.